RJ, do you ever remember that meme format of the person gushing with celebrations and champagne over finishing third that one time?
I remember that.
Well, that was probably Marc Marquez after the Spanish Grand Prix this past weekend. The happiest man to ever finish a Grand Prix in second. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Wait a minute. If the meme is that he finished third, why is he finishing second? I don't get. Oh, jeez. I've thinking too much about this.
Close enough. Welcome to episode 513 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harris, and glad you could join us for another episode of the show. And wowee. MotoGP, the series that we arguably had the most amount of question marks about entering 2024, given the state of its product and where the future of the series was heading, has now had back-to-back heaters. Motorsport doesn't make any sense this year, and we are trying to, well, make some sense of it here on this episode of M101. In case you couldn't already tell, RJ O'Connell is here. Hi, RJ, how's it going?
It's going. The sirens outside that you hear, you may be able to pick up, are not for me. They're not for Trey really? Either.
Makes a change.
But who could they possibly be for? Because as far as I know, Cam Buckley doesn't constantly have a stream of ambulance sirens outside his front window.
Well, given recent news and the fact that the NYPD are annoyingly on the prowl, it can only mean one thing. The Super Sub is back in for this edition. He heard the bikes were biking, and he insisted on filling in for Cam Buckley this week. It's Mr. Ryan Eric King. Hello, King. How's it going, buddy?
Hello. I am glad to be back. I have no beefs with any former KTM riders that I need to talk on.
Is that why the sirens are going outside? Is there something you not? Did you write something mean about Jack Miller on Twitter recently or something?
Nah, the French are here to take me away.
Oh, I see. They've responded to the news about Johann Zarco getting thrown out of race control, haven't they?
I thought they were just interested in seeing that man eat a bunch of cheese balls in the middle of New York City.
Not my favorite pastime, I must admit. Very, very heavy on the hips.
No, that dude, bless his heart, he did actually fall through on eating an entire, like, gallon plastic jar of cheese balls. And it did make him sick. But he followed through on it.
I don't think that's the consolation prize that you think it is, RJ. I'm just throwing that out there. Also, because we like to keep a little 101 here before we really get into the nitty gritty, we have to talk about this because all three of us were in our own Discord channel watching this as it went on. King, how's your heart rate after game five last night between the Knicks and the 76ers?
I never want to experience that again.
Dre,
see you for game six.
Dre, you said it. It's done. Get these bums, aka the 76ers, off the court. But you've got one thing that I have learned from watching New York Knicks basketball with King and Sasha's a longtime backer of our podcast. This version of the New York Knicks is like Cardiac City.
I think King's blood pressure, as a guy who was a former really high-level tennis player, somehow King's blood pressure was like 190 over 110. He should be dead right now.
Nah, because Dre, you were saying it was over. I'm like, it's never over until it's over. And you're like, no.
I thought it was over, and then with seconds to go, Mitchell Robinson does a star jump in front of Maxi, and it's a four-point play and when down six, and eventually the 76ers force it into overtime, which they then go on to win.
No, you're missing. You're fixated on that foul. We got to talk about the buzzer beater to send the game to overtime. Just a logo three. And I'm like, how does that work? There's only one dude that normally works for, and Tyrese Maxey is not that guy.
Tyrese Maxey shot, what was it? It was a buzzer beater with like 9 seconds to go in the game from must be about 32 feet. It's a logo free. It's the dumbest shot imaginable if it doesn't go in. Because if you've left time on the clock, it's a low, very low percentage shot. So of course he hits it. And I was like, I literally said in the middle of the Discord call, what in the fuck have I just watched?
Oh, it was something. Now, I actually didn't get to see the bicycles because I was actually in King City on a day trip with my partner, celebrating my partner's anniversary of 21st birthday. It was a good time. I got to enjoy authentic New York slice. I got to see the outside of Madison Square Garden. I got to see the new train hall that I think looks cool. I understand it's not old Penn Station, but I think it looks neat.
Yeah, looks good. Could use some chairs, but besides that, looks good.
Which means I probably missed on my way over into said city probably the best MotoGP race of the last 2 weeks.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? For many, many bike fans out there, this was the fight that I think a lot of people had waited a long time for. I mean, if you wanted the last proper Marquez-Bagnaia fight, you'd probably have to go back to Aragon in 2021, I think, when Mark had only just come back from arm surgery number two. He's halfway through his list of surgically repaired arms by this point. And that was a heater that Bagnaia would go on to win. And we got a rematch. Only this time they're both on similar bikes. And one's in blue. That was quite weird. We're still getting used to that. But yes, we got a classic between Marquez and Bagnaia in the Spanish Grand Prix, which was a really, really fun race. We'll talk about that in a bit. We also had an absolutely manic sprint race. What if I told you, gents, that 60% of the field crashed in the space of a 12-lap sprint race?
Oh, I did hear about this. I heard that in the span of just a second, four riders hit the deck, and two of them were related.
Five of them in the space of 60 seconds.
That was
a wild one.
That's not good.
It's not ideal. It's not great. And we also get to break down the real reason why Ryan King's on this week's episode. He heard a Frenchman got thrown out of race control and he insisted he join us on this one. Because it's just funny. Just the idea of seeing Johann Zarco in full racing levers chucked out of a race control room by security. The mental image of that would be hilarious to me.
It's something that you would see on like 2010's Monday Night Raw.
Or 2023 on the streets of Paris when there's another protest over something and next thing you know, Freddie Spencer's car is upside down and on fire. It's the French way.
This means that if that were to happen, he is slightly more popular than Emmanuel Macron.
Slightly. Just a smidge. So we'll break down all that over the next 40 minutes or so here on Motorsport 101. But places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/Motorsport101 if you want to check out our experimental, well, there's your caution episode on the wonderful Fuji Speedway. And yes, go listen for RJ O'Connor, who absolutely crushed it in that episode if you haven't already. He did a magnificent job on that one. I can tell you, RJ, you may not know this, but the account themselves from where there's your problem liked the tweets.
Oh. So
they've acknowledged our presence, which I think is really goddamn cool.
I appreciate it.
So congratulations, man. Yeah, we did a good job with that. So you check out the YouTube version, or again, where all good podcasts are usually available. If you prefer your podcast via the not so visual medium, you can do so over there. Our website, motorsport101.com, if you want to check out our blog and all of our content, as well as my blog on everything MotoGP in Jerez, as well as IndyCar's absolutely chaotic week across Barber and beyond, including a sacked driver and Georgina falling from the heavens and nearly wiping out Pietro Fittipaldi. It's been quite the week.
And it was only Tuesday when we recorded the podcast episode. We're also on multiple social media platforms, including Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Elon Musk's failed business investment. You can follow us at motorsport_101. If you want to find our personal handles, you can at DreHarrison101 and RJ O'Connell. And please follow our esteemed guest, Mr. Ryan Eric King, at Ryan Eric King. It's easy to remember. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. $10 as an upgraded form. Get through the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can send these episodes live as they are being recorded. Thanks, as always, for your ongoing support. Including Jason, who's listening in right now in that chat. Thanks, Jason. Thanks as ever, buddy. I hope you enjoyed the show. So, without further ado, let's talk about the big one, the Blue Ribbon event. The event with the attendance of over 300,000, depending on who you ask. It's the Spanish Grand Prix.
First of all, we need to talk about Hulk Hogan doing the attendance figures for the Spanish Grand Prix this weekend.
Yeah, I'll take a quick pause on our set list before we go into that. But yeah, I don't know if you did you see this news, King, that Dorna may have slightly miscounted the total attendance?
Yeah, because I heard like, oh, this is the highest attended MotoGP race of the last like 2 years. And I'm like, I watched the race. I looked out there. Yeah, there was a lot of people there, but it didn't look like Le Mans.
Right, because that's the thing, right? Initially, on the Sunday, we got the word that the overall weekend attendance for the show was 296,000.
Damn!
Which I thought, holy shit, that's got to be the highest I've ever heard for Jerez, because I know it's normally like at full chat, like an 80,000-90,000 seat kind of facility, or attendance facility for that kind of... It's a popular round, Jerez. It's probably the most popular of the Spanish races now in general.
So that shit's not easy to get to, too.
No, it's not as bad as Aragon, but it's not straightforward. And they also claimed there was 145,000 on Sunday, and I was like, hold on a minute. 145K? And as King quite rightly, I had the exact same thought as King. The number one round on the board tends to be Le Mans these days. Le Mans has topped 100,000 on Sunday for the last 2 or 3 years now. There was no way near the same amount of people at Jerez as there was at Le Mans this year. But it's a cute thought. Dorna had to very quietly correct themselves on Monday, saying that they were just a smidge out. And by King, I just want to throw it to you there. What's 115,000 people between friends?
That is about the average football game in college football.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like one Rose Bowl.
That's how many people got to see Hulk Hogan body slam after the giant WrestleMania 3, dude.
Yeah, and he weighed 700 pounds and everything.
He body slammed the 900-pound Andre the Giant in front of 290,000 fans in the Jerez Superdome, brother.
Yep, very much so. So they had to very quietly release a press release saying that we may have miscounted. Dan Rossomondo had to very sincerely apologize on his personal Twitter for the slight counting error. King, I think they just forgot to carry the one. Personally,
that's a big one.
That's a very big one, isn't it? Yeah, it's still the most attended Spanish Grand Prix in just about a decade. It was still a really good turnout relative to Jerez.
It just wasn't that good.
It just wasn't cataclysmic. I was like, okay, like King is a KTM man. We know Pedro Acosta is very hot at the moment. I thought, did Pedro bring in that many people from the South Coast? Also, how's your Brad Binder fan support going at the moment? Because this is the first time we've had you on for a MotoGP show this year. How's the support wavering over there?
I think Brad Binder should pass his bike to somebody else.
Oh, that's not Brad Binder that we're worried about passing the bike to somebody else.
Yeah, it is one guy from Australia.
Oh man, if we had the soundboard over here on Riverside. But I think we should talk about the Spanish Grand Prix itself and Marc Marquez and Francesco Bagnaia going to war in the second half of the race after race and championship points leader Jorge Martin crashed at half distance. Marquez chased down a second and a half advantage that Pecco had, tried a couple of risky overtakes, but Bagnaia held on to take the win over Marquez with Marco Bezzecchi in third for VR46. What do you make of that epic fight? But first, what do you make about that double overtake on the first lap from Bagnaia?
Oh my sweet Jesus.
Pecco.
You feel the goosebumps?
Jesus,
this hurts.
I've just watched RJ O'Connell slap himself on the wrist so hard he actually felt it. That's actually quite funny to me. But no, like, he basically told Jorge Martin that off is the direction that you can fuck, basically, because I make no bones about it. It's one of the best overtakes I've ever seen in MotoGP. That was utterly incredible. I have never seen anything like that. The perspective, this is the run down from turn 5 to 6, the back straight of RF, the run towards Pedrosa Corner, named after the man himself, which he was in this weekend, because who doesn't love Danny Pedrosa as a wild card? We love
Imagine
that.
Imagine racing around your own corner, man.
yeah. Like, it's a wild time, because now we have two, like, 2010s races that have corners named after them at RF, because now we've got Pedrosa Corner where a turn 6 where they used to call it dry sack. It's now, I don't know why they called it dry sack, but it's now Pedrosa Corner, and now the last corner is now Jorge Lorenzo Corner.
I'm surprised that Manscaped never thought to co-sponsor dry sack corner.
I feel like they may have missed a trick on this one, but nonetheless.
Yeah, they missed a trick by not sponsoring us, but we're still open. Call us.
Call us Manscaped. You know, we'll shave for the greater good. Anyway, you should be doing that anyway. Besides the point, like, that run down to turn 6, like, it's one of the few overtaking places at Jerez. It's downhill. You're going about 185 miles an hour going down there. This is lap 1, and Pecco Bagnaia with a full tank of fuel on cold tires slams the brakes around the outside of the right-hander at Pedrosa Corner, and then slots himself in perfectly behind Marc Marquez going from 4th to 2nd. I have never, ever seen anything like that before.
Those
in a MotoGP
margins
race.
Have got to be so thin. There is no margin for error for this. You either pull this off handsomely, or you ride off into the gravel.
Well, in today's MotoGP era, if, like, there's a good chance Bagnaia locked his brakes. Like, and if you lock your brake on a MotoGP bike these days, one of two things happen. Either you let off the brake and you run wide, or two, you tuck the front and you crash. There is no good outcome here. And Bagnaia absolutely nailed that pass. I said to Jason, who's our resident awards tracker, immediately put that on the overtake of the year list.
Golden melon contender.
Yeah. King, you had to have been gobsmacked watching that, surely. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, stunning. Just jaw on the floor.
No. The start of the second lap where Marquez almost overtakes Bagnaia for the lead, and then Bagnaia gets a pass, and both him and Martin go through on Marquez after he bobbles it. Like, there was so much action, man.
Oh yeah. That was just the appetizer of Bagnaia pulling off one of the great passes in MotoGP history. To even go from 4th to 2nd, and given how hard it is to pass in the sport these days, that was a critical double overtake to go for, because he started 7th on the grid. People forget that. He just had an outrageously good start, and just took care of all the traffic pretty much immediately, got up to 2nd, and the top 4 are pulling away quite quickly. Jorge Martin was leading this race reasonably comfortably. Like, Bagnaia was scouting him up here and there, and was staying in his airflow, waiting for something to happen, and then halfway through, Martin tucks the front and crashes from the lead at Pedrosa Corner, ironically.
We were doing so good. Martin was just taking the points, man. And then, of all the times for the old Ducati adage to come true.
You know the phrase, King. How does it run again?
Ducati tucks the front.
Yay!
He said the line. Roll credits. Death taxes. Ducati tucks the front. And at that point, before he tucks it, Martin has a 42-point lead in the championship. And like for all the shit we've said about the way this year's played out so far, Martin was the one dude who hadn't put a foot wrong all year. Small spoiler, he'd won the sprint race the day prior. I think it's his 12th sprint win or something silly like that.
He loves a good sprint.
He's so good over half distance, it's ridiculous. Ironically, it was about half distance where he tucked the front and crashed. And Martin had no explanation to the media. He's like, I cannot explain just how this happened, basically. And next thing you know, down he goes. It's absolutely ridiculous. The gist of that chat goes, couldn't handle the pressure like Fabio's tire in the sprint race. Oh, more on that later. But yeah, not ideal. So Bez slips away. Also, by the way, if you want the best reaction to that Bagnaia overtake, you've seen this now, that MotoGP kind of films that sort of like Parc Fermé area before they go onto the podium. They rip that straight out of F1, which I think is hilarious. They got that warm-up room now. They keep the cameras rolling. And Bezzecchi watches him get overtaken by Bagnaia with the overhead shot that we've seen on social media since then. He turns to Mark and just says, "Mother of God." It's a great reaction.
We're just setting this up for the big moment where we get the clash of the Titans. Mark had dropped to third. He finally gets past Bezzecchi for second place. And then with five laps to go, it is on. Like, they're hitting bikes. They are hitting shoulders, battling for the lead. And all the while, I wasn't watching it at the time. I remember you telling me before we went on the air saying, like, the one thing I was thinking watching this, please don't crash.
I have colleagues in the motorsport images office where I work who are also MotoGP fans. And shout out to Jade, a good friend of mine. You may know her at Looking Spiffy. Wonderful person. And we had a chat about it. And she knows I'm a Marc Marquez fan. And she said, "Dre, how are you watching that race?" And I just said, literally like this, like head in hands, saying, "Please don't drop it. Please." Like, I was begging Mark, "Take the 20. Take the 20. It's fine." Like, I was bricking it. I mean, I don't know how you felt watching that and running up to those last maybe five or six laps. But I know we've both got soft spots for Marquez. What were you thinking at that point? Because we're going, "Oh my God, he's chasing Bagnaia down. This might happen."
I thought it was either. I thought it was going to be one of those pass him and win or pass him and crash.
God, so did I, because it was just like, this exactly happened at the sprint a day prior. It happened at Cota. He'd just taken the lead when he passed Pedro Acosta, and then 30 seconds later, he tucks the front down the hill and crashes. I'm thinking, oh no, not again. Not again. Not three times in a row. My heart wouldn't be able to take it, but no, he got to Bagnaia, and then this was the beauty of the race where Bagnaia and Marquez were just so much stronger in different areas. Like, Bagnaia was really strong turn 9 and 10. He was really strong at the hairpin. But Marquez was really good turn 7 and 8 through Aspar and then that double left-hander sequence before you get to the amphitheater. And that's where he went down the inside, but ran it just wide enough for Bagnaia to try the cutback again. We saw that cutback before at Portimao, and we all know how that ended. So again, shitting myself, thinking, oh no, don't hit each other. No, no! And it was absolutely fine. Marquez runs a little bit wide, Bagnaia retakes the lead, and everything was fine. Everybody could breathe. There wasn't a huge wreck. Thank God. And it set up the final phase of the race, which was really, again, Marquez trying to chase down Bagnaia and find the way through. There was a key moment. I don't know if you spotted this, King. Do you remember what happened with four laps to go with Bagnaia leading that race?
No, I need a refresher.
Bagnaia sets the fastest ever race lap of the track with three to go.
Oh, that'll put him at distance. That'll do it.
Because the thing is that Marc Marquez had broken the lap record in an attempt to chase down Bagnaia. He did, I think it was a 37.6 to get within like half a second. And with three to go, Bagnaia is leading by I want to say 0.4 over the line. And with three to go, he pulls out a 37.4 on 23 lap old tires. I'm just like, what? I could not believe what I was watching. That's the second time I had to say that during that race. I was like, I was watching it on Discord, and I turned around to the call and I said, guys, what the fuck was that? We were in shock. We were just like, how the hell has he done that? And it's not like Marquez's lap was slow. He did a 37.6. I checked the lap chart on MotoGP's website in the run-up to this recording, and I was just sat there going, wow. Mm-hmm. It's like Bagnaia had gone Super Saiyan to try and win this race. It was outrageous, and I think that was just enough in terms of buying himself enough time to get to the flag. So Marquez never really had another chance to win it or get close enough to try and overtake before winning. It was 0.3 of a second over the line, and I think that was just Bagnaia doing just enough to keep Marquez behind him. But I can't remember Pecco Bagnaia riding a MotoGP race that well. He was absolutely perfect from start to finish, and that was, I think, his best ever performance in the sport. And that's the thing about it, kid. He had to be perfect to win that race, and he did.
Oh, yeah, because pretty much if he made a single error, if he ran wide, if he, you know, lost track, like if he broke traction at the exit of a corner, Mark Marquez was gonna get him.
So the rewards for this, Martin and Bagnaia are now separated by just 17 points in the standings. Oof. And you just think, if Mark Marquez didn't drive the bike at COTA, he's only 32 points back now. How much more different could that have been?
One, it makes you think. Two, you look at the table now and you realize there's 33 points covering the top seven right now. Or like less than a weekend's worth of points covering seven names in the standings. You got Jorge Martin, Francesco Bagnaia. We've all forgotten about Andrea Bastianini, who very quietly has just gone about his business. Maybe not the fastest guy out there, but he's still just racking up results and just chugging on points. Pedro Acosta is in that mix after his second in the sprint. Not so great Grand Prix in 10th in the end, but I don't know if you saw the sprint podium after Saturday. 80,000, according to their count, 80,000 Spanish folks shouted, Pedro! Pedro!
800,000 fans in the Jerez Dome, brother. Oh, watch a Pedro Acosta body slam his 5,000-pound motorcycle, dude. Purumba.
That's not going to get old anytime soon, but it is wild actually seeing the Acosta effect happen in real time. He's got his own fan club now. They were front row in that amphitheater, and like Jorge Martin won that sprint and no one gave a shit. They were all here for Acosta. Like, Spain is back on the biking map again, with Martin as a top contender, Acosta potentially a top contestant, and Marquez back to something near his best. And they were chanting for Pedro Acosta, the 19-year-old. Yeah, they know a quality rider when they see one in Spain, let me tell you. Whew.
He's but pretty good at this.
He's in that mix. Marquez is in that mix. And hey, your man's Brad Binder's in there as well, King. He's 33 points back. He's in there.
Yeah, we told you he's not the KTM rider we should be worried about.
Yeah, KTM is still around, and it feels like they're chipping away at the Ducati Armada, but it feels like it is an uphill battle.
Look, I've seen enough. I said it after COTA. I've seen enough. They need to go all in on Acosta for next year. That's their guy. That is absolutely their guy. Like, Brad Binder is a perfectly adequate number two in this scenario, but Pedro Acosta is him. Like, that boy is very nice indeed. The way I see it personally, overall, it's amazing. Like, shout out to a friend of the show, Kira, who's in our Discord server. He showed me a fantastic double image on Twitter on Monday morning of a contrast of Marc Marquez 4 years apart, because we all know her F2020, the Andalusia Grand Prix, was when Marquez broke his arm.
Went to shit.
Yeah, the broken arm, on his knees in pain, having just broken his arm, and in an arm break that we knew it at the time would probably cost us 4 years of Marquez's prime. And then 4 years later, on a Parma violet colored blue Ducati, is in the Jerez gravel trap, praying in front of his own fan base, happy he's finished a Grand Prix in second. And that's the thing about it, he was beaming. This is a man who has 93 career pole positions, 60 plus career wins in the top flight. I've never seen him so happy to finish a Grand Prix in second.
Because, like, he didn't win, but he knows he's back.
Yeah, it was... You were maybe four bike lengths behind the established double world champion, arguably the best rider in the world right now.
Francesco Bagnaia became the final boss, as you wrote in your notes.
Yeah.
And Marquez almost finished his story.
Almost. Look, he probably should have won the sprint. He was right there on top of it when his crash, and we'll get to that very shortly. But he finished 0.3 of a second behind Francesco Bagnaia on a GP24, which is clearly better than the 23, in my opinion, from what I've seen so far this season. And arguably on Bagnaia's best track, because he's won there 3 years in a row now. He's won in at Jerez, going back to 2022. And he was right there. And he pushed Bagnaia to his limit for him to win that race. I've never seen Bagnaia run a race that hard to win it. Like, he's back. Like, this is four races in, and Mark is back. And let's not forget, he's doing it on last year's bike. This is scary. Like, Mark is back by all accounts. And this season just got a lot more interesting.
There were people within Ducati that said, no, we don't want him. What if he leaves us after a year? Oh, that's funny, man.
Yeah, yeah. The question's now going to be who ends up on that 2024 bike or 2025 bike next year, because it's now looking more and more like 3-1 doesn't go.
Maybe it absolutely doesn't go. Martin, Bastianini, and Marquez.
Bastianini's there right now. He's done a very solid job backing up Bagnaia. He's beaten him a couple of times in his own right this season already. He's only a handful of points behind him in the championship. He's more than held up his end of the deal so far this season. He looks like chopped liver. Allegedly, Aprilia are going for him now because they think he's not going to be there next year. Martin has 1 foot out of the exit door at Pramac. He has made it abundantly clear he wants out.
Dude, he would have been if that rumor that Pramac was going to switch to Yamaha was actually true and not a bunch of nonsense.
And that's the funniest part. I don't know if you saw that, King. They were said, oh, we're going to tease a big announcement at 2 p.m. an hour before the race. And the announcement was, here's what Andalusians dress like. I'm just like...
King was so surprised that it blew out his microphone.
Yes, I had to... I don't want to scream directly into my mic. That's why I turned away.
Shame.
Pramac... absolutely trolled the media pen. And if you saw it on Twitter, because I consider him a friend now at this point, Simon Patterson was losing his shit when he saw that announcement. He was pissed when he saw that announcement drop. I was just like, look, it's a bit unfair to string the media box along like that.
Did Marquez do that before he left Honda?
A little bit. A little bit, but a bit of TikToks here and there and you know, little things like that. But when the team is dropping official communications and telling the media guys, yeah, we got a big announcement at 2 p.m. Because there's rumors that Pramac might drop Ducati for Yamaha too, which I think is also quite funny. And despite that, to drop that off, which also not the best, given it looked like the text was AI generated, which didn't go over well either. Oh boy, it was just like, oh shit, here we go.
Speaking of oh shit, you want to talk about the sprint race? Because this was nuts from what I heard. I didn't watch this one, but I heard that out of the 25 bikes that started this race, 15 of them crashed at some point. It was total chaos. There was morning rain that evaporated over the afternoon and left the track, having multiple damp patches of where the riders hit them. Well, the bikes hit the floor. Again, 60% of the field during the second half of the sprint, which, of course, Jorge Martin won. Four riders crashing in a span of 60 seconds. Dre, what'd you make of this carnage? Should we have stopped the race?
I mean, probably. If five dudes go down in the space of a minute, something is fundamentally wrong with the track, in my opinion. That's not coincidence. That's a cause. Something has happened. And a lot of people just didn't know what to make of it. We nicknamed the final corner, Lorenzo Corner, the sequel to our old gag from Germany 2019 in Formula One, the final corner of poor judgment. Because I joked with King, because King didn't see the Moto2 race that happened on Sunday morning as well. Eight riders crashed at the final corner in that Moto2 race, which was just... We were like, what the hell is going on here? Right, we were going through lap by lap scene. Is there going to be yellows in Sector 4 again? When you get that graphic pop up on the screen, it's just like, oh, shit. but about, I don't know if it should have been stopped. This is one of those dodgy ones where it's like, what do you do if you're race control? Because I kind of briefly explained it. Chaz Davies did a brilliant job of explaining it on Twitter. Friend of the show, Chaz, and current Ducati riding coach over there from World Superbikes now. Because Jerez's got really old tarmac, it makes the surface quite porous. So when the sun comes out, because it rained on Saturday morning, like early doors, it had rained. So obviously the track was wet and it was drying out as the sun came out. Like, as it was drying, some of the surface water just stays there. It just doesn't go away. So there was just a load of damp patches out there. And because the sun was quite harsh, some of the riders couldn't see the damp patches that were just off the racing line. So as a result, guys just dropped it left, right, and center. As I mentioned, 15 dudes crashed in this race, including Marc Marquez, who was leading at one point. There was a tandem triple crash between Nea Bastianini, Brad Binder, and I want to say it was Aleix Espargaró. Well, no, it was actually Alex Marquez.
One Marquez brother crashed, and before anybody could react to it, the other Marquez brother went down. Sir, second Marquez brother's crash in the Jerez sprint.
And he was leading that sprint. He was pulling away from Martin. He was like half a second in front of him, and just when he was breaking free, he tucks front, but not in the wet patch, not the first wet patch. It was one at turn 11. Really strange crash on that one, and you know, shit happens. I was not mad as a Marquez fan at all. Also, which was kind of wild about that sprint as well, I don't know if you noticed this one as well, Fabio Quartararo, who started 23rd after a horror show in qualifying, crossed the line in third place. you ever see those position graphics you get in motorsport where it's like, oh, where did you start from and then where did you end up? When was the last time you saw a plus 20 next to a rider's name?
barely anywhere.
And that would have been great. It would have been a great story. Yamaha gets a podium finish in a sprint. Fabio's been struggling, but it's a nice little feel-good story for Yamaha. Oh, the tire pressure check came through. No!
Told you should have paid the $1.75 to go pump those tires up at the gas station.
Saved at the pump. He saved at the pump. Woo! yeah, Fabio Quartararo violated the tire pressure regulation. Now, for those who don't know, they did change the rules on this year. It's not going to be a DQ. Last minute, they decided to end it before the season started. It's not going to be a disqualification for it, but it is going to be an 8-second time penalty in the sprint if you violate the tire pressure warning, which means that it promoted Danny Pedrosa to a sprint podium. King, your test man came through.
Damn, not washed. Buffet who? Let's go.
Not washed. Danny Pedrosa, at the tender age of 38 years old, had, you know what's funny as well? They gave him his own private podium celebration. I love this. Dorna just like, you see this part of our sprint set? We're going to put it in front of your van. And you could get your bronze medals. Fabio very sportingly signed the back of the bronze sprint medal and gave it to Danny personally, which was a very nice gesture of him. Find it on KTM social media. It's a very funny clip. They had their own private podium celebration at KTM garages. They love him. In that KTM camp, they adore him. Like, the best part of it, the King, I don't know if you knew this or not, right? Pedrosa didn't know he was fighting for third.
that's the best kind of podium, when you don't even know it's coming.
Like, I'll give you the full story, because you'll love this, right? Because they were like 8, 9, 10 seconds off, they'd seen the leaders go off into the distance because they were quite far behind, like 8, 9, 10 seconds down the road. They had no idea how many bikes were in the distance. So, like, Pedrosa and Quartararo were fighting quite hard for this, for third place. But Pedrosa thought he was in 6th or 7th. He had no idea that he was fighting for third. So when he pulls into the garage, finishing 4th on the road, he's pulled into the garage. The whole KTM garage has come out, giving him a standing ovation. Like, and he's like, why are you all outside clapping? it was his crew chief said to him, like, where did I end up? And he was like, 4. He holds up 4 fingers. It was like, oh, 4th. Oh, okay.
Oh, he's dialed in. He's so dialed in, he doesn't even know where he finished on the road.
He said he didn't look at his dash. He was too busy trying to find a way past Fabio. Couldn't quite do it on the road. But he did not know he was fighting for third place, which I think is just hilarious. That he had no self-awareness whatsoever. And to be fair, given how many people had crashed, hit each other, overtake themselves in a hurry, I almost understand the fact that he didn't have the slightest idea where he was.
It's the Carmelo Anthony, this is nothing new meme from his time of the Trailblazers.
Oh man, big hoodie mellow vibes.
That's spot on. Big hoodie mellow vibes indeed. If you stopped that race, I wouldn't have blamed you. Maverick Vinales, you also crashed, and that's what I was one of the big people that said, we need a button so we can alert race control if there's a problem. And I'm all for that idea, personally. But he said it should have been stops.
Now, I don't want to be that guy, but, you know, it's
kind of
one of those moments where it'd be useful to have rider radio.
Don't say that, King. Do you want to get killed in biking circles? Because it's like, in the eyes of many, like, having radio is like the death penalty for MotoGP. I fully agree with you. But, like, if you tell a biking journalist you want to put radio on these bikes, he will slit your throat.
Well, too late. They're already testing it, from what I understand.
They did. They tested it at Portimao earlier this year. They're like, they're seriously considering bringing it in. And a lot of these old school biking heads have this mentality of the purity of the race, where it's like the rider's got to make his own decisions, the greater good, all he's got is a pit board, you know, besides that, and, you know, the occasional dash cam message. I mean, the way I see it, this is clearly the way the sport is going. You've evolved from pit boards to having dash dash cam messages now at a certain point, the next step is clearly radio. Is it not? I mean, I think better and effective communication between the riders and race control is healthy, personally. But what do I know? I'm just a bike fan. We don't do sensible round here, do we? No, we
don't. Speaking of things that are entirely insensible, let's jump back to the Grand Prix for a second, where it's time to talk about Johann Zarco. This is why we brought King on board. This is why King pushed Cam Buckley out of the seat. It was just like, I need to talk about my old nemesis, number five, who was booted out of race control after he complained about an incident during the Spanish Grand Prix. Relatio Spargo sprung around and took Zarco Ed out. Zarco said, and I quote, "I don't think you're the right person for the job. The stewards deemed no further action was necessary on the incident." Cam has also left us a note with just the hashtag NOKWAPI. Not happy. No one knows what a penalty is.
My old favorite. Cam communicating via osmosis.
Who wants to take this one first?
I probably should, and let's say this has been the thing for 5 years now in MotoGP since Freddie Spencer took over as basically lead steward. It's becoming more and more clear the riders really aren't here for Freddie Spencer's shit. And to be fair, I can't blame them to a degree. It's the fact that, for those who didn't see the incident, Aleix Espargaró went outside of turn five, going up the hill back towards the downhill section towards Pedrosa Corner, swung himself into Johann Zarco and took Zarco out, collected the pair of them. Blatantly Aleix Espargaró's fault. 100% Stonewall penalty. No action taken. Despite the fact in the sprint, Marc Marquez had contact with Joan Mir to overtake him, and Marquez was given a position drop penalty. Like, it's Spencer missed a Stonewall penalty, in my opinion. Like, that's, we've been here before with Freddie Spencer, and it's, you could see why Zarco is frustrated, because this is just years of build-up and just frustration on race direction being inconsistent with punishments, not figuring out what the appropriate penalty is to penalise bike racers in general, and just, I mean, how frustrated must you be, King, if you're walking up to the lead steward in MotoGP and saying, "I don't think you're the right person for this job."
In certain sporting competitions, a comment like that to a lead official is enough to get you tossed.
Yeah, and if that was Tony Brothers in the NBA, you're getting teed up.
Yeah.
Without question, you're getting a T for that.
If that's a Major League Baseball umpire, you're getting tossed, even if you're not the person that says it. We now have precedent of this because Aaron Boone.
I feel like this was entrapment to get me on the show.
Yes, yes, it was. Gotcha.
Some random fan makes a comment about the umpire. The umpire's not paying attention, and it's Aaron Boone who gets ejected.
And then doubles down saying it, well, he should have been in control of the fan. Like, I don't even like the Yankees, but like, that's a load of nonsense. It doesn't matter who said it. I threw him out anyway.
Man, I'd say there are a lot of complaints you can make about Freddie Spencer, but at least he's willing to take criticism.
Well, is he prepared to take, I mean, because he tossed Zarco from race control for that. Like, he was like, what? Apparently what really set it off was that Zarco was expecting Spencer to make a decision as he's watching back on the footage. And then the fact that he sat on his hands was apparently that's what set Zarco off. He was like, well, make a decision then.
Oh my god.
But he didn't. He was just like, I don't think you're the right person for this job. And that's what, because apparently Dorna has, like, the FIM has released a statement basically saying Could you please respect the people in the race control booth after this? So it looks like they're now trying to have some sort of like gentleman's policy to essentially say, hey, could you not criticize the officials, please? Which, okay, I can understand to a degree. But I also would stress to the FIM and to all those involved in race control, get your house in order, because like these riders are carrying like half a decade's worth of frustration at not making fair and valid decisions on stewarding in this series for quite some time. Remember last year at Jerez when people blew up at Fabio Quartararo and Morbidelli getting penalties for lap one incidents, and Miller getting a position drop for a strong block on Bagnaia. Like that was the one where like I saw prominent journos in the biking space like personally insulting Freddie Spencer. It was that bad last year, and I'm like, look, I do not condone this for a minute. We shouldn't be firing personal jabs at officials like that. Criticize the argument, not the person, you know, like at the end of the day. But good luck is what I basically say to them, because
the only way we're enacting any sort of meaningful change is if it gets to the point where race direction makes a completely out of left field call that impacts the championship of the final lap of the season.
Yeah. And we all know how well those go over, generally speaking. Well,
we did get new people in the same roles. We did it. Job done, we fixed the problem.
Bullying works. We got the officials turfed out and we started over. And there's not been a single stewarding controversy in that series since then. Why have you all gone quiet on me? Yeah. All I will say to that is, one, good luck, race control. You're going to need it. And second of all, as Cam Buckley channeled via osmosis, no one knows what a penalty is anymore. Good luck, is what I will say to that one. MotoGP is back in a couple of weeks' time at Jerez. At Le Mans, one of the big ones. It's going to be a really fun race this time round. There actually genuinely will be over 100,000 people on race day at Le Mans for the French Grand Prix. I would say, you know, stick around for the hometown heroes of Fabio Quartararo and Johann Zarco, but given the bikes they're on, they'll do well to get in the points. Have fun with that.
I just hope everybody has fun.
It should be. Like, I remember last year, on the Thursday, there was over 10,000 people there just trying to get Fabio's autograph. They love him in France. Like, it is actually wild how big of a superstar he is in that country. Like, shit is crazy. There'll be a huge turnout for this Grand Prix, and hey, if Marc Marquez is keeping this form up, like I said, I think this championship just got a lot more interesting. Fascinating twists and turns as we go on and as the season continues. We'll be back for Formula One next week from Miami, the Miami Grand Prix. It's a sprint weekend as well now, so we're doing sprints in Miami.
I get to watch this event from the other side. I get to see how everybody else feels when they watch this when they're not there.
Yeah, you get to realize how us poors feel.
Yeah. poors. Yeah, we get to enjoy all the sights and sounds from scenic Hard Rock Stadium parking lot, all the dressing.
I've got good news for you, though. I was able to talk to Miami's Grand Prix promoters, and good news, you're doing the driver intros this year. Hailing from Stephen de Jingland, he is Ferrari's great hope and savior, Lewis Hamilton.
Say hi to T-Swift for me.
Before we get at it, I can't believe I mentioned if Brundle gets within 50 feet of Taylor Swift, it's going to be like a nuclear incident, the scale of Chernobyl.
Now, if Patrick Mahomes is there. We gotta call him Pablo Blanchero. We gotta complete the circle.
Oh, Paolo Banchero, good to see you. You're a proper star in the NBA now these days. Wouldn't that be great? I tweeted that out yesterday. It has 10,000 likes on Twitter. 10,000.
Jesus, damn, we're blowing up. Hey, we don't have a SoundCloud, but what we do have is a podcast that you can subscribe to. We put up multiple podcasts, sometimes every week, sometimes every other week, but we'd be lovely to have you on.
Indeed. Join us for the Miami Grand Prix. And apparently some key member of Red Bull may or may not have left the team in dubious circumstances over the last few days.
Who's to say?
Yo, Adrian, we did it!
We?
We? Who is this we you speak of?
We!
We'll talk about the Miami Grand Prix next week, but until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, and big thanks to Ryan Eric King for coming back to talk some bikes and French politics. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye. And there's nothing political about being a Johann Zarco hater.